Hello everyone, I'm Blake Crash Priddle. September is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. Alzheimer's and dementia is a horrible disease that affects more than 500,000 Canadians. Steve Disher was one of them. This week we're going to speak with Sonia Disher, the wife of the late Steve Disher. She's going to tell us all about her journey dealing with early onset Alzheimer's, Love, Laughter, and Tears, which is also the name of her memoir. Her memoir not only chronicles the struggles that she faced, but it also talks about the happy memories that she had with her late husband. And she wants people to know that if you have a loved one with Alzheimer's and you're struggling, you're not alone. Start by telling me about the book that you wrote that chronicles your husband's battle with Alzheimer's.
Sure. My husband was 50, and I asked him to go outside one Christmas to unplug tree lights. And he didn't look like he had heard me. And I said, "Did you hear me?" And he said, "No." So I repeated it. And he still looked blank. And I said, "You don't know what I'm saying, do you?" And he said, "No." I don't know why, but I looked online for a memory test. And when I looked at the memory test, it looked easy. I didn't think he'd have a problem. But he scored very low on it. We both started crying. We knew there was something seriously wrong. And there was nothing around for me to help. I felt alone. I felt that there was no information. So it was very frustrating. I had to learn everything myself. It was a long battle. There was no answers. There was no trials that he could go on because he was too young. Any trial started at age 55, not 50. So I said, "Don't use their stats. Just let him try it." But they wouldn't. And he was a healthy young man, other than this. So it was very frustrating. So why I decided to write the book was I wanted to help other people. I wanted to give back and let them learn from our experiences on the challenges that we went through and how we dealt with them to ease some of the frustration, not only for myself, but for the person that had the illness. Because the more that things went wrong for him, for example, if I was trying to put his shoes on and he couldn't do it, he would get more frustrated knowing that he wasn't doing it right. So I would stand up, hold his hands and look into his eyes and say, "Okay, let's just start again. And keep it calm." And I would go down and put his shoes on, and it went okay the second time around. And so there's a lot of little hints in the book about things that we ran across and how we dealt with them. So that's why I wrote it. And I wasn't sure at first whether I would publish it, but I thought even if I don't, it's therapy for me writing it down. But I had a couple of very close friends that had read my drafts and gave me feedback, and they urged me to publish it, and I'm really glad I did. I've had wonderful feedback, and it makes it feel like it was worthwhile doing and that I did the right thing.
You obviously learned a lot about Alzheimer's when your husband was diagnosed. What is the most important thing that people need to understand about Alzheimer's disease, and what are some of the misconceptions that people have about it?
Well, the one thing that used to upset me was everybody would say, "Oh, he's going to get violent." They don't all get violent. And Steve didn't get violent. There was people, when he finally went into a home at the end, there was people that would be singing all the time and like dancing. If you were taking them into the dining room, they would skip along and dance and sing. And there was all different. Everybody experiences it differently. Not everybody is violent. And the only reason I put Steve in a home at the end was because he kept running away. And I thought he was running because he thought he was still in the military, doing a military run. But he would head straight for the highway. And where we live, it's very cold in the winter. He couldn't dress himself. I dressed him. And if he had gone out in the winter and done that, he would have froze. And not only that, he headed straight for the highway. So he could have got hit by a car. So he went into a home because of safety. And the three times that I had to call the police to find him, he would be really upset thinking that I was trying to have him arrested. And that's why I ended up putting him in a home. Not because he was violent and not because I had to do a lot of care for him. One thing that people should know is dementia is like an umbrella, and there are all kinds of diseases under this umbrella. 7 years ago, there was 70 diseases under that umbrella that could get dementia. Now, 7 years later, now there are over 100. So it's very important to know that you're not alone, and there's a lot of information out there. For me, it was you don't know till you know. And I use this example all the time. We had an in-ground pool, and Steve was a very good swimmer. I didn't know when he would not know how to swim, whether it would be that he didn't know how or whether he didn't have the coordination anymore. And that was scary for me. Like, if he's in that pool, I'm not going to be able to get him out. So I used to turn things onto myself, make it my problem, not his. And he reacted a lot better to it. The one thing I said to him, if I had said, "You can't swim without a life jacket," he didn't want to feel like he was babysat. He was a grown man. He wanted to feel like he was still independent. And so I would say that, you know how I worry a lot about everything? If you put this on, I won't worry. You can still swim and I won't worry. So he was more than willing to do it so that I wouldn't worry. And I heard a speech one time, one lady was saying, your first reaction if somebody's doing something wrong. So if you walked into the bathroom and your loved one was brushing their teeth with the hairbrush and saying, "Ow, ow, it hurts, it hurts." The first thing you want to do is go and grab that out of their hand. Well, their reaction to that is that you're attacking them and they're going to fight back. They're not going to have a good response. But if you just pick up a toothbrush and hand it to them and say, "Here, why don't you try this, honey?" You'll have a better reaction. They won't be hurting themselves anymore. You have to put yourself in their position, and every time it's a learning curve. You don't know till you know. You're going to experience it once, and you might have it wrong that time, but you'll know the next time. We're not saints. We make mistakes. We're human. And just do the best you can. I always wondered why he could remember stuff in the military. He never ever forgot his military experience. And but he couldn't remember what we did yesterday. And somebody explained an onion to me. The outer layers of an onion peel off very easily, and those are your recent memories. As you get closer to the center of the onion, it's very tight and they're harder to come off. Those are your old memories. That's why they stay with them so long. So that made a lot of sense to me. And I always remember that. There's a lot of things that you can get from the Alzheimer's Society. One of them I found was very important was it's a little card, looks like a business card, and on it says that the person that you're with has memory problems and please excuse their behavior at the, you know. So I used to give it to the waitress when I went into a restaurant with him. I didn't want to center him out if something happened. I would just hand this to her before we started to order, and then she would know how to react if he said something that was out of the ordinary. That was a big help for me. Using your hand on their cheek to get their attention. They look in your eyes and they start to listen because there could be one, their mind could be wandering, thinking of other things. But if you get them to look you in the eye and you've got contact with their face, you've got a better response from them. Using small sentences instead of, we all talk in compound sentences, and it's very hard to learn not to do that. But if I asked Steve to go downstairs and get something out of the freezer and put this in the laundry, he wouldn't know what to do. Because I've given him two tasks in one sentence. But if I said, "Could you put this in the laundry?" he would be able to do that. And that's one of the important things is make them still feel like they're useful. If they can't do something, don't try and give them that task, but give them something easier. He always used to help people out at the trailer park, making decks for people. Well, he couldn't do that anymore, but he wanted so badly to help. And a friend of ours would say, "Okay, you screw these screws in, Steve." And he got frustrated one day and said, "I can't do this." And he started to walk away. And our friend called him back and said, "That's okay, Steve. You can hand me stuff." And he was able to do that. And he felt like he was helping. And that was very important to him. So my biggest thing would be make them feel like they're still important. Make them feel like they're still an adult, that they're useful and you want them around.
The way that you describe giving instructions in a way that's less confusing for people with Alzheimer's is very similar to how some people communicate with those on the spectrum, like myself. For instance, you can't say the dishes need to be done and then expect them to get up and do the dishes. You have to ask them specifically to get up and do the dishes. So it's very similar in some ways.
Yes, I've been reading your book, and there is a lot of similarities, and that's a very good example. They need short sentences, specific tasks, and if they're doing it and they're not quite doing it right, you can help, but don't take over, so that they still feel like they're able to do it.
I know that there are a lot of theories as to what causes Alzheimer's. Some of them include being exposed to certain chemicals, including some chemicals that are used in the military. Was there some speculation that the chemicals that he was exposed to may have contributed to him developing Alzheimer's?
Yes, exactly. When he first got it, I wrote a letter to Veterans Affairs saying, "I think his experience in the military caused this." And I got a flat no. I was not approved. Was very frustrating. There was a lot of paperwork to be done, but that didn't deter me. I just carried on doing it, and I put an appeal in. And they were right to return me down at first. Because all I said was, "I think that you were responsible for it." The second time around, I did my homework. I went online, I got people that worked with him to give me a list of every chemical that he used while he was in the military. And I researched every chemical to see if it affected the brain, the nervous system, how it affected a person. And I came up with a lot of information. Then I wrote a letter to his neurologist, and I put all these references in it, how he used them, and what effects they can do. And the neurologist backed me up, and I said, "I need a letter from you to go to Veterans Affairs in your words, stating all this." And he did. And we were approved to say that his military career did contribute to having Alzheimer's. They had already recognized Parkinson's, but they had never recognized Alzheimer's before. And when Steve was approved, he and 13 others were approved at the same time. So there are also 10 other contributors that they always say that contribute to you getting Alzheimer's or dementia. And at first they said that Steve had some of these things, and I just researched those, and I've been with Steve since we were 16. So I knew a lot of these he had never done, like having a head injury, and they told me he smoked 20 cigarettes a day or 60 cigarettes a day for 20 years. He didn't smoke. So I had emails from people that worked with him and friends to say that no, he didn't, and how would you ever work full time plus run a farm and still be able to smoke that much? So I made sure I did my background and my had all my ducks in a row before we went back for the appeal, and I'm glad I did. There's a lot of different things. Smoking, drinking to excess can lead to dementia, and there's all different kinds of things that can lead to it. You can have vascular dementia as well, which is to do with the veins in your brain, so it's not cut and dried.
I think another misconception that people have about Alzheimer's is that people think that it's just about forgetting things when clearly it's a lot more complicated than that. There's more to Alzheimer's than meets the eye.
Yes, there is. His fine motor skills deteriorated very fast. And when you get it young, like early onset Alzheimer's doesn't mean that he was in the early stages of it. It meant that he got it at an early age. So his fine motor skills went fast. I noticed when he went to sit down, he'd have to feel for the seat because his depth perception wasn't there. On my website, sonyadisher.com, on the first page, if you scroll down, there's a link to a YouTube video, and it shows how a man whose mother had Alzheimer's and the newscaster went and had this experience of what it's like for somebody with Alzheimer's. They put headphones on you that have the background noise that these people hear all the time. They put glasses on so that you've got the different vision that they end up with. And I noticed with Steve, if we came straight on towards him, he would see us. But if we came in from the sides, he didn't see us at all. So his eyesight was going. They put tape and gloves on your hands so that you don't have the same feeling that you normally do. Something in your shoes so that you walk differently like they do. And these people experienced it for 12 minutes, and the man was in tears. So when I go back down to Arizona this fall, the dementia task force down there is going to allow me to go through that experience. I think it's wonderful for anybody that's got a friend or a relative or a loved one that has been diagnosed to experience that. You'd have a lot more compassion and understanding for what they're experiencing. Just doing a simple task was really difficult for them.
I can imagine that looking after somebody that has dementia can be quite stressful. Did it ever have a negative effect on your mental health when looking after him? And if it did, how did you overcome that challenge?
I'm not sure that it had a negative effect on my mental health, other than I felt guilty sometimes because I hadn't reacted the right way. And like I said, you don't know till you know. So once I had reacted a wrong way, I knew next time. I remember walking upstairs one day, and this was early on, and he was in the bathroom with the door open putting deodorant on, but he was rubbing the deodorant up and down his chest instead of under his arm. And I said, "What are you doing?" And his look on his face was embarrassment and confusion. He didn't know he was doing something wrong, and it hit me like I should never have responded like that. He didn't know that he was doing it wrong. So I think the one thing that people kept telling me was, you need to put him in a home, you need to put him at home. And I wasn't ready to put him in a home. I could still look after him. Like I said, the only reason I put him in a home was because it was dangerous with him running away. It was like losing a child, having to call the police to find them, and you don't know if they're going to find them. But I think you know when you're ready, and don't jump to conclusions when other people say it. You have to decide for yourself when's the right time. The one thing that I wanted him to always have was dignity. People, when they said, you know, put him in a home, I finally took their advice and put him in respite for a weekend. I said, I will try this. Now, respite, you put them in the respite facility and you have the weekend to yourself. Well, I still went down every day to visit him because I wanted to be with him. But what I did notice was I had a great sleep for those two nights. And you need to look after yourself. That sleep, those nights, let me carry on. And so I started doing it every 2 weeks, put him in for a weekend so that I would get a rest. I could recharge myself so that I was able to look after him.
Do you know if any action is being taken by the military or other workplaces to ensure that workers or members of the armed forces are not being exposed to chemicals that could potentially cause Alzheimer's?
I can't really say for sure, but I would think that back then people didn't think to wear masks and gloves. He didn't wear protective equipment back then, but I'm sure that they are now. I mean, they're learning as we had to learn. So I'm sure that they are now. And that's what was wrong. He wasn't wearing protective equipment when he was exposed to those things.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about Steve and the things that he liked to do and the things that made him special? I do know that he loved swimming. I remember reading part of the book and that was mentioned.
Well, he loved hunting. He used to go moose hunting and deer hunting. He loved that. He loved fishing. He was a very good man. I'm so blessed to have had him in my life. Never had a bad word to say about anybody, even if he should have. He loved farming. So when he decided we were going to buy a farm, he retired from the military, but went back in the reserves so that he wouldn't be posted and leave me at the farm by myself. He was great. He thought he was Dr. Doolittle, but the animals, he wasn't afraid of any animal. he actually got a skunk out of our garage one time with cat food, just talked to the skunk and walked the skunk out of the garage, didn't get sprayed or anything. So he was really a good father, a good husband, a good son, and a great friend to people that were his friends. He used to coach hockey and referee hockey, and then he helped coach the swim club that my daughter was swimming competitively with. So he was always interacting with the kids, loved to camp, and we went camping, took the kids camping, and that they've got great memories of sitting around the fire and doing s'mores and pie irons, and I don't think there's any bad memories that they could have of their dad. He was a great grandfather to our granddaughter, and they were like peas in a pod that you couldn't separate them. And he did a lot of things with her. And if you talk to the people that worked with him, they had a lot of respect for him. In my book, I put a couple of excerpts from people that wrote after he passed, and they describe Steve very well.
So you wrote your book as a way of showing awareness for Alzheimer's and to support those that may be in a similar circumstances. How else do you show advocacy for the Alzheimer's community and awareness?
When I go down to Arizona, I'm in a gated community down there, and I've been helping facilitate the Alzheimer's support group meeting down there. I did a talk at one of the dementia care, and it wasn't a long-term care facility. It was an assisted living facility. So I did a talk on the book down there. We went over really well. They are way ahead of us down there, and I want to bring some of that back to Canada. They have the task force down there has actually gone around to businesses and had them dementia-friendly businesses. And they've got little stickers that they're having made up to put on the windows to say that they're dementia accredited. One example that it just floored me. They have a moving company that they've trained, and they know how to handle somebody that has dementia. They know how to approach them. They know how to talk to them. And they'll go into your room if you're moving, take a picture of every room in your house, every cupboard in your house, and go to your next place that you're moving to and set that house up identical so that it's not such a traumatic experience for somebody with dementia. I think that's wonderful. The two airports that are in Phoenix and Mesa have also, if you go in and you have a loved one with dementia, you go and you get a lanyard for around your neck and it's a certain color. And anybody that works there knows that person has dementia, so that if they look lost or whatever, they know what's happening. And I think it's wonderful. So I want to bring that back here. I want to see if we can get something set up so that people feel comfortable when they're taking other people out that have dementia.
Are there any resources or support groups that you can recommend for people that may have loved ones with Alzheimer's?
The Alzheimer's support group meeting was beneficial to me. I was one of the youngest ones there because Steve got it young, but it was still helpful to me because I could vent. I could let them know what was going on, what was frustrating me. I could cry and they would understand, and they could give me advice if they'd experienced it, and I could do the same for them. So there's similarities throughout it all. So that was a big help. The one thing that States has is you go to a meeting and you bring your loved one with you, and then they take your loved one off and do crafts while you have a support group meeting. So you don't have to worry about leaving them at home or having somebody come in to sit with them. I think that's a wonderful idea. I didn't find that there was a lot of support places for me to go. And that's why I had to learn all this myself. The only thing that I had was the support group meeting and also the respite.
And some of the proceeds from the sale of your book are going to be going towards the Alzheimer's Association and the Phoenix Network too, right?
Yes, yes. The Alzheimer's Society actually hasn't got back to me very well, which I'm going to approach again. I know somebody that is associated with them now, so I'm going to go directly through that person and see how I can get out there. But the Phoenix Network, I have donated to them already. And they were great with Steve. I took Steve for stem cell treatments. I tried everything under the sun to try and get him better, thinking that maybe there'd be a magic potion with a combination of some of these things that I tried. And I knew in my head that it wasn't going to work, but I needed to try everything. So when I had the stem cell treatments, the first one was amazing. And I phoned the doctor, the neurologist, and asked, do you think the brain hospital for brain injury would help? And they said it would be worth a try. So when I phoned the hospital for brain injuries, they said it wasn't an injury, so we can't help you. So I went to the Phoenix Network and I explained to it that it wasn't a brain injury, that this is what it was. And I just felt that we needed to train those new cells. And they jumped on board immediately. They provided occupational therapy, speech therapy, which was a blessing. They even had hands-on woodworking, one-on-one with him. So he felt like he was doing things. He made a couple of items and they were really supportive. So I appreciate them to no end. They were really good. So yes, part of the funds that I get from the book are going towards the Alzheimer's Society and the Phoenix Network.
And pretty soon your book is going to be adapted into an audiobook, and I understand that you got someone pretty special to narrate it. Tell us who.
I am so thrilled that Blake Priddle approached me and offered to do the audiobook for me, and I am really looking forward to hearing it and getting it out there. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, Blake.
Hey, it's my pleasure, and I really enjoyed reading your story, and I look forward to having it as an audiobook. What advice would you give to somebody that is currently in the position that you were in when Steve was dealing with Alzheimer's, that may be struggling?
One of the things I would say is don't be afraid to ask for help. You're not alone. Go to your support group meetings. They'll give you information they've gone through and where you can get help from them. And if you have somebody that says, oh, if you need anything, let me know, take them up on it, because they're not going to call you back and say, would you like me to do this? But if you say, would you mind sitting with my loved one for an hour while I run to the store? Take them up on it. Don't wait for them to come to you. Ask friends to fill in for you if they can. The one thing I used when Steve was in the nursing home, sometimes he didn't want to go into the cafeteria and have dinner. So I asked one of his old bosses from the military that he respected, and could I use your name? And he said, yes, definitely. So I told the nurses this man's name. And if he wasn't going to do what they want, they would say, oh, Sergeant Disher, so-and-so said, it's time to go to the mess. We're having supper. And he'd say, okay. And he'd go right in there. There was not even a hesitation. If they mentioned this man's name, who used to be his boss, he was right on board with it. So if you have to use a friend's name, do it. We were sitting on the, another example is we were sitting on the deck at the trailer, and he was bent that he was going for a run. And I was in tears trying to beg him not to go for this run. I'll come back, he kept saying. But I knew that he wouldn't know where he was going. and he wouldn't know how to come back. So I phoned my friend, he worked with her husband, and said, I need him to phone Steve and tell him that his guys are okay, because he was worried that his men needed him. And that's why he was going to go running. And so the friend's husband was already in the air. He couldn't phone, but they got his son to phone and pretended that he was Steve's friend and said, hey, Steve, I just wanted to let you know all your guys are home. They're all good. They're with their families. Everybody's safe. Steve calmed down immediately and sat there. So if you have somebody you know that your loved one respects, is very close to, would listen to, because sometimes you're the enemy because you're the one that's around all the time. Not really the enemy, but they're looking at you differently. So if you bring somebody else on the scene that they don't see very often, but they really respect or love, you get a better response. And just take advantage of whatever you can that helps.
Sonia, thank you so very much for joining us this week, and my condolences for your loss.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate being on your show. Thank you so much.
And that was Alzheimer's activist and author Sonia Discher. You can keep up to date with Sonia on Facebook, or you can visit her website, soniadischer.com. Her book, Dealing with Early Onset Alzheimer's, Love, Laughter, and Tears, is now available for purchase, and a portion of book proceeds will be donated to the Phoenix Network and the Alzheimer's Association. Remember, if you have a loved one with Alzheimer's, you're not alone.